It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
they wrote the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, BAPCPA. I think they misnamed this law. This is the Bankruptcy Prevention and Consumer Abuse Act of 2005.
Bankruptcy attorney Jason Crumbine talks about bankruptcy law and the types of bankruptcies available to people facing tough times. We also talk about how bankruptcy might affect your credit rating during our client's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around. Turn me around. No, turn me around. Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up the freedom land. And now, this week's news you can use. Getting a divorce in Virginia got a little bit easier when changes in the law took effect on July 1. After being filed in court, divorce papers must be served or legally delivered to the spouse. If the spouse can't be found or lives out of state, a notice is published in the newspaper. Although the divorce can be filed and served for free, newspaper publication is not free and often costs hundreds of dollars. This hurdle keeps many low-income people trapped in marriages years after separation. But starting yesterday, if a divorce is filed for free and the spouse can't be found or lives out of state, the divorce papers simply can be mailed to the spouse's last known address and posted at the courthouse. What used to cost several hundred dollars now should cost only the price of a stamp. In other news, Medicaid eligibility rules for the aged, blind, and disabled also changed on July 1st. Medicaid provides free or very low-cost health care for people with low income and few resources. Not all resources count. For decades, Virginia Medicaid resource rules automatically did not count a life estate, that is, the legal right to live on a piece of property during a person's lifetime. Now, life estates created on or after July 1 will be evaluated like other real property. These life estates still may be exempt if the life estate is the person's home or former home, can't be sold after a reasonable effort, or is owned with someone else and a sale would cause hardship. Any life estate existing before July 1, 2008 will continue to be an automatically exempt resource. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is bankruptcy. Bankruptcy means you ask the court to excuse you from your duty to repay your creditors. Bankruptcy allows you to discharge, or get rid of, most of your debts, but also keep a certain amount of property. Any property you can't protect is sold, and the money is used to pay your creditors. There are two kinds of bankruptcy for people not engaged in business, Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. Under a Chapter 7, you may not have to repay any of your debts before they are discharged. Under a Chapter 13, you must repay your debts, at least in part, before they are discharged. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
If you're just joining us, this is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on 97.3 WRIR. And it's time for our weekly question and answer session, and we have in our studio a person with a question. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Mildred, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, Mildred, and what question do you have for us?
Okay, my question is, how long after you file your bankruptcy is your credit restored?
Well, Mildred, as we'll learn later on in the show, you can only file a bankruptcy once every 8 years. And there is a law called the Fair Credit Reporting Act that governs how long your, what they call, adverse credit information can be kept on your credit report. Generally, you have adverse information on your credit report for 7 years. Those are all of your unpaid bills, debts, judgments, any claim against you. However, a bankruptcy can stay on your credit report for up to 10 years. And so there's no definite right or wrong answer to your question. What the bankruptcy does, at least in theory, is it removes all of those unpaid debts, bills, and judgments from your credit report and replaces them with the notation that those bills, debts, and judgments have been discharged in bankruptcy. But that notation is going to stay on your credit report for up to 10 years because that's how long a bankruptcy can stay there. The unpaid bills, debts, and judgments, if you hadn't bankrupted them, they would be gone after 7 years. Now, let's say your bills, debts, and judgments are, say, 5 or 6 years old. They're going to fall off of your credit report after another year or two anyway, when we get to the 7 year period. So if you're wanting to file bankruptcy simply to improve your credit report at that point, you're not doing yourself any favors, because if you did nothing, your credit report would be clear after a year or two when those old bills, debts, and judgments fall off. And if you file bankruptcy at that time, then the bankruptcy will be on your credit report for 10 years. So it really depends on how old those bills, debts, and judgments are. Generally, though, bankruptcy is going to improve your credit score simply because future creditors are going to know that you can't file a bankruptcy again for another 8 years. And so at that point, you're pretty much going to be at the mercy of your creditors. They know you can't file for another 8 years. And so they'd be more willing possibly to loan you money knowing that you have used that bankruptcy protection. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around. Turn me around. Turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking. Keep on talking. Marching up to freedom.
This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright, and we're here with private attorney Jason Crumbine at his law office. Jason is a specialist in the area of bankruptcy, and that's what we'll be talking about today. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. One of the things that I do have to disclose is that I am a debt relief agent, and I do help people file for protection under the bankruptcy code.
We thank you for that disclosure. Tell us, Jason, what is the difference between a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13 bankruptcy?
Well, the basic idea of a Chapter 7 bankruptcy is that it wipes out most, but not all, debts. The only person you end up paying would be the filing fees and your attorney. with a Chapter 13 that is designed for a slightly different situation. That's designed for the people who either are above the median income or who need to protect a specific asset that would be not protectable in a Chapter 7. Like, for example, a house with too much equity or a car with too much equity. But the basic idea is that you pay your creditors over a period of time.
What does somebody have to do before they file for a bankruptcy?
Well, the procedures in preparing to file for a bankruptcy is, number one, you are not eligible to file for bankruptcy unless you have taken a specific class that is a class in credit counseling. Those classes are available online, and depending on your situation, you may be eligible to take the class for free. Then you'll have to do a whole bunch of paperwork, either with an attorney or without an attorney, to prepare your paperwork to file with the bankruptcy court, and then you go through the process of the actual bankruptcy.
Okay, so you mentioned two different types of bankruptcy, a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13. Let's start with the Chapter 7. How does the Chapter 7 work from start to finish?
Basically, the process runs something like this. You take the credit counseling class so that you're eligible to file for bankruptcy. Then you fill out a whole bunch of paperwork, which is filed with the bankruptcy court, that explains all the information about the assets that you own, if there are any, all about the debts that you owe, all about your income, all about your daily expenses, the expenses that you would have after your debts are discharged in bankruptcy. You file this bankruptcy with the court. You file the paperwork with the court. Then there is an additional class that you have to take that is called personal financial management. That's also available over the internet. You cannot take that class until after you have filed for the bankruptcy. Then there is normally a court hearing, and I know that was going to be a question that you were planning on asking later. There is a court hearing that you are required to go to. That's called a meeting of creditors or a 341 meeting. And basically what happens at that hearing is that the trustee, the person who is assigned to distribute anything if there is something, his job is to ask you questions about the things that you own, the assets, your income, and your expenses to determine whether or not you're paying all that should be paid and to see if there's anything that he can take and sell and distribute to creditors. Then you go along with the rest of the process. Either you get your discharge in a Chapter 7 or you make payments through the Chapter 13 to satisfy your creditors, and then eventually you get a discharge.
Okay, so under these two different types of bankruptcy, what happens to a property that you're buying on credit? Let's say a house or a car. How do the two bankruptcies treat that kind of property you're buying on credit?
Well, there's actually a difference in how you treat a house versus how you treat a car. With a house, you can just simply continue to make payments as long as there is not too much equity in the house. You just keep on making payments regardless of whether it's a 7 or a 13.
If okay, tell us what equity is.
Equity is the difference between the amount of money that you owe and the value of the property. So, for example, a house. You owe $100,000 on your house. Your house is worth $150,000. There's approximately $50,000 worth of equity. On the opposite situation, you have a house. You owe $100,000 on your house. You have been allowed to get into one of those 125% loans where you actually are able to borrow more than the house is worth. The house is only worth $85,000. There is negative equity. You actually owe more than the house is worth. Same thing is basically true with a car, where you might potentially, I mean, in most circumstances, you owe more with a car than you actually have in value in the car. You would normally owe $20,000 for a car that's worth $15,000.
Okay, so if there's very little or even negative equity, you can just continue to make payments and keep it?
For the house. For a car, there are some slightly different rules. They changed the law in 2005. You're no longer allowed to, with a car, just continue paying. You now have to make a decision whether you're going to keep the car and continue paying and promise to pay, making essentially the bankruptcy inapplicable to the car. That's called a reaffirmation. You can redeem the car, that is, give the creditor the current value of the car or the cash or the payoff, and there are a number of companies that will finance that for you, or you can surrender the car. Those are the options with a car and with some other types of personal property.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the situation of not very much equity or even negative equity. What happens if you have a lot of equity in, say, a house? What do you do then?
With the Chapter 7, this is a potential problem. But it depends, once again, on exactly what the facts are. So, for example, if you have the situation of a husband and wife who own a house, normally that would be, and it's very important to look at what's actually on the title. If the title says tenants by the entirety, then $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 worth of equity is usually, but not all the time, not a problem. If you have a single person, only one person on the title, just the woman, just the man, just the kid, whatever, that is a much greater problem if you have a substantial amount of equity. Then in a Chapter 7, under most circumstances, you would lose the house to the Chapter 7 trustee. In a Chapter 13, what would happen is that you would pay the Chapter 13 trustee the amount of money that they would get if you had filed a Chapter 7. And that's the amount of money that you have to pay, and that's a very complex calculation that's not exactly easy to describe.
I see. So basically, if you've got too much equity in a house and you can't protect it, filing a Chapter 7 bankruptcy could be the worst possible thing you could do.
That is exactly correct.
So tell us, what happens to debt collection after someone files for a bankruptcy, whether it's a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13?
Debt collectors are not permitted to collect on debts that are included and discharged in a bankruptcy. When a debt collector contacts you on a debt that was included or discharged in a bankruptcy, it violates actually two laws. Number one is the bankruptcy, for which that's a little harder of a lawsuit to bring. The other one is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is actually one of my favorite laws, says that a debt collector is not permitted to communicate with you about a debt and state that the status of that debt is something other than its correct legal status. So, for example, when they send you a bill and say, you have to pay this hospital bill, but that bill was included in the bankruptcy, that would be a false statement about the status of that debt. They're saying that it's not discharged. They want payment. And that violates the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And you can sue the debt collector for that violation. That's actually one of the things that I, let's just say, really enjoy.
I see. Well, can a person be discriminated against or treated differently because they have filed a bankruptcy?
Legally, no. However, there are some exceptions to that that are generally very small. Sometimes what happens is that if you work for example, a bank as a teller, they may have problems with that. That has more to do with the potential for security issues, where you might be mishandling the money. But if you work, for example, in the back office, if you work doing anything other than handling the money, generally, the answer is no. Now, that's not to say that they won't find some other alternative to discriminate, to fire you, to do something like that. They can say, you were 3 minutes late for work, go find another job. But they can't do it based exclusively on the bankruptcy.
What about renting an apartment? Would a prospective landlord be allowed to not rent to a prospective tenant because that tenant had recently filed a bankruptcy? Would that violate the law?
That would not violate the law because the extension of credit, and renting an apartment would be an extension of credit, can be based on any credit standards that an apartment complex or any other lender chooses to base it on. Most places base it on your credit score. And most people's credit score is artificially depressed inaccurately after the bankruptcy, because usually what it shows is both the bankruptcy and the debts, and that will artificially reduce your score. Now, the other thing that they might look at is they might look at what was discharged. So, for example, if you have discharged other apartments, they might have a tendency to not be particularly happy about renting to you because they think that under that circumstance you would have a greater potential for defaulting on the apartment at the new place.
Well, that's a good lead-in to my next question, which is how will bankruptcy affect someone's credit? I mean, let's assume, and this may be a big assumption, but let's assume that the credit report is done correctly, that the old unpaid bills, debts, and judgments are erased from the credit report. It's replaced by a bankruptcy, which will show on the credit report. How is that bankruptcy going to affect someone's credit? Is it going to make it better? Is it going to make it worse? Is it going to have no effect? What's going to happen here?
Well, great question, but you started out with an inaccurate assumption.
Okay.
That the credit report will report accurately. That, from my experience over the last 5 years of doing this, is an absolute false assumption. Normally what happens is that you have a situation where the credit report identifies the fact that you filed bankruptcy, but the accounts continue to show that you owe the money. This is my second favorite law. This is the Fair Credit Reporting Act. With the Fair Credit Reporting Act, they're required to do reinvestigations to show the correct status. So, for example, the debts that are discharged in bankruptcy, you write a letter to the credit bureaus and say, these debts were discharged in bankruptcy, please fix this, and then you wait for them to see what gets corrected or not corrected, as the case may be. Then what you do is you take a look at the situation there. What is reported then and what and the effect that it has depends a lot on what is what was reported before. If, for example, you were the kind of person who had gotten sued a lot, defaulted on lots of debts, gotten into all sorts of debt problems prior to the filing of your bankruptcy, the bankruptcy may actually improve your score because the debts, which are not erased from your credit report, that's a common misconception. They are not removed, but they are changed. They are reported as included or discharged in a bankruptcy. So they are not scored. That should raise your score because the only thing that's now reporting is the damage of the bankruptcy. On the other hand, if you filed bankruptcy preemptively before things went into debt, when you knew that you weren't going to be able to file to be able to pay your debts in the future, that would actually depress your score. If you're sort of in the middle, it may or may not have a strong effect.
Okay. Well, last question, because we are running out of time here. Can a person file a bankruptcy without an attorney?
Legally, the answer is yes.
Would you recommend it?
That's a different question. Legally, you are able to file a bankruptcy without hiring an attorney. I don't recommend it. I think that particularly after they changed the laws in 2005, they rewrote the law. They wrote the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, BAPCPA. I think they misnamed this law. This is the Bankruptcy Prevention and Consumer Abuse Act of 2005. I don't recommend filing a bankruptcy without the assistance of a lawyer because there are so many pieces to it that are just so complex. I really don't recommend filing it. It is legally possible. I don't recommend it.
Yeah, I think we've just barely scratched on the surface of bankruptcy, and I certainly would have to agree on that. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, this is Marty Wegbright.
This week's top three tips are about fair debt collection. The first tip is that a federal law called the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act limits what debt collectors can do. A debt collector is anyone, including an attorney, who collects debts for others. The second tip is that a debt collector can't harass, abuse, mislead, deceive, or be unfair to you. The third tip is that you can stop a debt collector from contacting you by writing a letter to the debt collector telling them to stop. Once they get your letter,
they can't contact you again, except to say there will be no further contact or that they intend to take a certain action. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered on this show, email that question to marty@cvlas.org with radio show question in the subject line. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. No one deserves to be abused. Domestic violence is linked to other forms of oppression and harms women, children, and society as a whole. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, attorney Sushila Varkey, explores the legal protections available to survivors of domestic violence. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wentworth.